And good morning. It is 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm News Director Jonathan Reeves, and today I'm talking with U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. Mr. Crawford, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning.
You know, last week, some House Republicans started the new year by voting to get rid of the Office of Congressional Ethics. And, of course, that was reversed after a lot of criticism that came from President-elect Donald Trump and others. In a Facebook post, you stated that you did not vote for those changes to the office. So the question I have for you is, who did vote for those changes, and why was that even proposed in the first place?
Well, it was a secret ballot, so we'll really never know who did. But I think cooler heads prevailed in that it was stripped as a part of the rules package. And I think that I will tell you that certainly there needs to be some reforms, and here's why. Oftentimes, members are subjected to investigations based on complaints that are lodged by anonymous individuals. And so when you launch an investigation on a member of Congress based on anonymous complaints, you're essentially depriving that member of Congress of due process. And that's not constitutional. Now, regardless of what people may think about members of Congress and about the institution, the fact remains that we are American citizens and we are still entitled to all the protections of the Constitution, just as any other citizen would be. And so I think it's entirely appropriate to revisit the constitutionality of these anonymous charges and the subsequent investigations that can cost members of Congress, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in defending their reputation. In many cases, they're unfounded. And the investigations reveal that, but not after having spent thousands and thousands of dollars defending themselves. And so, yes, reforms are appropriate, and we should discuss that. It was inappropriate, however, to include that in the rules package and not give it its, the kind of deliberation that I think is required to be able to responsibly review and reform those rules and the relationship between the OCE and the House Ethics Committee. And so that's where I think they went amiss, which is why I didn't support that, and why I think that we really owe it to the American people to be as transparent and open in that process. And I think that they'll arrive at the same conclusion, that regardless of what an individual's opinion is of a member of Congress or collectively of the institution, they should not be deprived of constitutional due process.
And I think that some of your followers on Facebook were curious about what Republicans were trying to hide by getting rid of that office.
I don't know that they're necessarily trying to hide anything. I think what you've seen is it was maybe just a real excitement about being able to do some things, and they picked the wrong time and the wrong battle at that point. And I think, as I said, I think cooler heads prevailed. I don't think there was any ulterior motive there. I think it was bad timing and bad judgment to put it in the rules package. But I don't think that there was any, malicious intent or any, subterfuge there. I just think that it was probably ill-timed and probably just kind of got caught up in all the excitement of a new unified government. And this was probably not the best idea to include that in the package. But beyond that, I don't think that there was any overt attempt to deceive or to engage in any kind of subterfuge.
Let's talk about the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. I know that's one thing that you've been talking about. It's one of the goals that a lot of Republicans have been talking about. Give us an update on what is happening in that regard.
Well, I think what you're seeing playing out right now is, we all agree, I think, you can see poll after poll, and the evidence indicates that Obamacare is flawed policy. However, it's the only policy we have right now. And so unless and until we have a consensus plan to replace Obamacare, I think that we're traveling down a dangerous road if we're not prepared to deliver an alternative that meets the needs of the American people in a meaningful way. And it's not enough to repeal it. You have to replace it, and it has to be replaced responsibly. And there has to be an appropriate phase in, phase out. That is to say, you don't want to jerk the rug out from under people. and it could cause major calamity in the healthcare industry and ultimately create some economic havoc as well if we're not careful about this. And so I think where we've probably not performed well is in the communication of this and the management of expectations, and that, you know, immediately as Donald Trump is sworn in on January 20th, that on the 21st, now everybody's going to be satisfied that we have a new healthcare plan in place and everything's going to be great, and, you know, colors are going to be more vivid and air is going to be cleaner and, you know, life is going to be better. I think life will get better. There's no question about it. But it's not going to happen immediately as he is sworn in, and now all of a sudden everything is perfect. That's not going to happen. And so if there's an expectation out there that there will be an immediate impact on people's health care, and look, we're all suffering with, you know, high premiums, high deductibles, and trying to make the decision of do I go to the doctor or not, because quite frankly, I'm going to have to cover this myself until such time as my high deductible is met. And so essentially your health care coverage serves as really nothing more than a catastrophic underlying, you know, policy. We need to do better and come up with something that works. It's not going to happen on day one, and I think people need to be aware of that. I support repealing Obamacare. I voted for it a number of times, but I think that there has to be a responsible replacement in place before such time as it is that full implementation takes place.
And when do you expect that to happen?
Well, like I said, it's not going to happen on day one. We're talking about months, and then probably the phase in, phase out would probably be a matter of years. And I don't mean to say 10 or 12 years, but I'm saying possibly one or two. And I think that people need to be aware that if you don't, you know, if you just push this thing off a cliff, it could cause some major calamity, not just in the healthcare, but economically, that we don't want to have to go through that. So we want to be careful that we are that this replacement coincides appropriately with the phase out of this currently untenable, terrible policy that needs to be changed, but we need to do it responsibly.
And I guess one of the questions is making a transition that wouldn't cut people off that currently are using it, especially if you have pre-existing conditions and the other things that we have talked about. I think that's one of the concerns, is how do you make that transition without cutting, you know, people off from the healthcare that they have right now?
A lot of these things are sort of market oriented that should and have already taken place. For example, you know, maintaining coverage until, you know, age 26 on your parents' healthcare policy. That's something that can be done. That the market responded to that without it having to necessarily be implemented into, you know, mandated policy. That's one example. Pre-existing conditions. The issue with pre-existing conditions is creditable coverage between employers. And, you know, under the old system, COBRA benefits were difficult to cash flow. Very few people could do it. And so when you have a lapse in coverage, you go into your new employer, and, you know, that lapse in coverage might create an exclusion based on a pre-existing condition. We can address those things in the context of the marketplace. It doesn't have to be a mandate from the federal government that says it has to be this way. But if we implement portability between employers, if we tear down the barriers from state-to-state competition, if we recognize that a lot of folks do want to keep their kids on their policy until such time as they secure gainful employment once they're out of college, these are things that can take place in the context of free market. And those are the things we ought to be looking at as a matter of course, rather than saying, you know, the federal government is going to mandate that.
How do you respond to Senator Chuck Schumer's and Representative Nancy Pelosi's claims that the repeal of Obamacare would make America sick again?
Oh, that's just campaign rhetoric. You know, look, they're doing everything they can to. This is not just Obama's legacy that they're talking about. They were fully invested. You know, keep in mind that, you know, Nancy Pelosi was the individual that said we have to pass the bill so we can find out what's in it. You know, this is the kind of leadership that they've had on that side. And they are fully invested in trying to maintain some, you know, validation of that poor leadership. And that's where this comes from. It's just purely campaign rhetoric, and it has no meaning, and it certainly has no bearing in developing good policy to help the American people.
I think some Republicans are what we're expecting. I think some were saying that, you know, you talked about this earlier, about this, some were thinking that maybe we'd have an immediate repeal as soon as Donald Trump takes office day one. Others say Republicans may just, we wanted to replace Obamacare with a Republican version of the plan. And I guess that's one of the challenges, is kind of going from there. What do you do and what do you replace it with?
Well, I mean, you could do a repeal in theory on day one. But that repeal would be probably on some sort of a timeline, as I suggested. It's not going to mean that once it's repealed that everybody is now not covered, or we have a whole different policy now. You know, we're reverting back to, you know, pre-Obamacare or whatever. You know, you could vote on Obamacare repeal on day one and then set a course for replacement with a phase out of the current law and a phase in of the future law. That could happen, but I just want people to understand that is probably a fairly extensive timeline. It won't happen on day one, nor should it happen on day one. I think that there has to be, as I said, a consensus, and really I would like to see bipartisan consensus on a policy that gets us where we need to go as a country with regard to our health care.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. Let's talk about the next Secretary of Agriculture. I know that you talked business and politics and some others about this, and I just want to get your comments as well. As a member of the House Agriculture Committee, what would you like to see in the next Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, I certainly would like to see an understanding of what the priorities are for rural America. And, you know, the ag programs, obviously those are a big part of our ag economy, but we're talking about rural development, the economic development that needs to take place in rural communities, and understanding how we can bring rural America into a level playing field into the 21st century, if you will. And you think back about, you know, the mid-20th century when we had the rural electrification initiative, that was a game changer for rural America. Connectivity will be that game changer for rural America in the 21st century, and I think that we need to implement that quickly and see that through. And there's a lot of entities that are engaged in that, but understand that has to be a priority, and I think an ag secretary should know that and should also consider that to be one of the high priorities. The other thing is, quite frankly, food security. It's a national security imperative that we be able to secure our ability to feed and clothe ourselves. And 350 million people in this country rely on it, and not to mention that, you know, we're a global provider. So it's important that we maintain the integrity of our food security, and that we recognize that our ability to feed and clothe ourselves is a national security imperative. And recognizing that should make it easier for folks to support policy that's driven to ensure that we do have a safe and abundant and affordable food supply in perpetuity. And we can do that and should do that. And those are the kinds of things that I hope that a new ag secretary recognizes.
And very quickly, we have about 20, 30 seconds here. Do you hope that trade with Cuba will be opened up during the Trump administration?
I do, and I'll say this, that I don't think that our initiative with regard to ag trade in Cuba has any bearing on anything that was done by the current president, and I'm not sure that Trump views it that way either. I think that we're looking at this strictly as an opportunity to create some market share for U.S. goods. And, you know, the byproduct of that is that we will hopefully be able to use this as a niche going forward to for some change in Cuba. But, look, we've traded with some bad actors in the past, and we do now. China, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Venezuela, Vietnam. And so that is not necessarily a disqualifying factor. But what we do with Cuba, what we don't want to do is punish U.S. producers who are really looking for market access, and we don't want to punish the Cuban people who are looking for good quality American ag products that they could benefit from. So I think it's a win-win in both areas, and our bill addresses that outside of the context of the current posture.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your help.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. And you're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.